Eric, it's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation to come and speak on this topic. We've been thinking about this for quite some time, and happy to share with you some of the thoughts and ideas that we have about woody cropping systems. Before I get started, I should acknowledge a few folks that have helped with information in this talk. Keith Klein was instrumental in collecting some data that will be presented here. John Blake is a colleague and mentor that has helped with discussions in bioenergy in the past. The rest of the folks have supplied the information or support for this work, and of course the Forest Service, Southern Research Station, Department of Energy, Oak Ridge, and Savannah Riverside have been very, very helpful in this. Zakiya mentioned a few of the options for woody biomass production systems. I just want to kind of talk about these briefly. Of course, there are timber harvest residues that are available in all timbering operations, pulp and paper as well, available at the landing, oftentimes left unutilized. There are the possibility of energy wood harvest from forest stands, western stands, and other forest stands tend to have high stocking rates, potentially could be replacing a bioenergy harvest with what we now call a pre-commercial thinning that is typically imposed or left unthinned in some cases, just because of the affordability of it is difficult. There's also a lot of hazard fuels available on public lands where wildfire hazards are being reduced through public mandate, basically, to protect those forests, and so there's biomass available in those. So these are mainly residual forest materials, and what I'm going to talk to you about today is purpose-grown woody bioenergy systems, or short rotation systems. Before I do that, though, I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the advantages of woody biomass for bioenergy. One of the advantages is that we have a diversity of feedstocks. Not only are these residuals, but these, as well as these purpose-grown crop systems, there are also a lot of mill residues that are quite well utilized at this point, but municipal wastes as well. And so there's a large variety of feedstocks that are available in woody feedstocks that are available. These are relatively low input crops. If we're talking about short rotation woody cropping systems, they're a little bit higher input than standard timbering operations, but still on the scheme of agronomic crops, they're relatively low input. We have a lot of genetic resources, just represented by the poplar genome here, but we also have a wide variety of select individual trees from various species that are have been selected for productivity reasons. We also have a number of market options for woody biomass cropping systems. Not only can we produce energy from these, but we can also produce pulp and paper and lumber. So integrating bioenergy with other commodities from forests also is a tremendous advantage, allowing the landowner to make decisions about how they want to manage their forest systems. And there's also a history of utilization. Of course, before the Industrial Revolution, we got all of our energy from woody biomass and have very well-developed systems for utilizing this today. Also, I should talk a little bit about process benefits. The woody biomass has low ash, low silica. It has year-round availability. We can harvest timber spring, summer, winter and fall, the material is easy to store, it's easy to handle, and it has high density. There's a number of environmental benefits also associated with these with woody biomass systems. They're protecting soil and water, air quality, and we've been using them in sustainable production systems for some time now. They're able to sequester carbon and create wildlife habitat. A lot of this is created through a diversity of structure on the landscape. You can imagine a set of woody cropping systems integrated through an agricultural system provide a lot of different structure and for biological diversity as well as structural diversity. Okay, so those are some kind of introductory comments that I wanted to make about woody biomass systems, and now I'd like to talk to you about some short rotation woody biomass production systems. One not typically thought of as short rotation system is a southern pine, but I think I can justify including that in the discussion as we go along here. Hardwoods are more typically thought of as short rotation woody cropping systems, and we'll discuss the number of species that are available for those systems. Coppice culture is another opportunity for short rotation woody biomass cropping systems. Okay, well, first of all, I'd like to talk about pine and the silviculture of pine for these cropping systems. We have a number of elite genotypes that have been selected over the past few decades for rapid growth, but we have the ability to select these for lignin content, crown architecture, disease resistance, and we have a very well developed methods for doing that, including somatic embryogenesis and hedging of pines for vegetative propagation of select genotypes, and they've been selected for adaptation to a wide range of sites as well. We have the capability of producing seedlings, bare root seedlings, by the millions in individual nurseries, very, very high quality seedlings. But not only do we have nursery operations, but we also have very well developed, very mature harvest systems where we can remove the material, forward it to landing where it's processed, chipped, and prepared for transportation. So the operations for these systems are very well developed. We also have very positive responses to cultural applications in these systems. A number of selective herbicides that are available for use for providing an uncompetitive growing area. There's over a million acres, of fertilized forest lands annually in the southeast. When we apply these approaches, we get very positive growth responses. One to point out to you here is more of an extensive pine management system at the Savannah River site, where we will typically harvest, prepare the site, plant the local genetic stock, and allow that to grow until maturity. At that location, we have an advantage of a large land base and not a large demand for timber harvest on that location. So this is a more of an extensive approach, but when we compare that to, for instance, slash pine or loblolly pine intensively managed, we can double or triple the productivity rate of these systems. Just a little example of how we can shorten the rotation for these, just a kind of a blow up of a first 5 or so years of production systems. where we're comparing it to this Savannah River standard loblolly pine system, applying herbicides only or herbicides and fertilizer, we can produce within five years the same amount that is produced in these extensive systems in 20 years. So truly we can shorten the rotation of pine, and this is one of the reasons why I talk about southern pines as a short rotation woody cropping system, as well as some of the other ones that we'll discuss. Okay. So now I'd like to give you an overview of some of the hardwood short rotation woody cropping systems that are available for us. By no means not all of them, but discuss some of the more promising ones. We're talking about poplar, hybrid poplar, eucalyptus, sycamore, and sweet gum are the areas that I'll touch on here today. These have large growth potentials. Again, they have strong forest available forest operations equipment and good genomic resources, genetic selection as well as understanding of the underlying genomics. One cropping system that is very encouraging for a number of reasons is eucalyptus for the south. We've explored a number of different species. Those are listed here for eucalyptus. Some of these productivity rates can reach up to 30 metric tons per hectare per year. And these are very stress tolerant and pest resistant plants with a wide site type adaptability. And it also coppices well. So in other words, we can harvest these systems and the stumps will resprout and grow very aggressively. However, with eucalyptus, we're restricted by frost in the southern Florida peninsula and the Louisiana and Texas coasts where there's low risk. We have expanded the range of using eucalyptus by selecting and engineering plants that can stretch up through the South Carolina coast and further inland into Texas. But these are this is a major impediment to advancing eucalyptus production systems. But where we do have the capability of producing eucalyptus, they're very productive. One of the concerns is that they're a non-native tree species, and there are worries about it being invasive. Talk about eucalyptus. We should also mention California, where it has been introduced for over a century. Many people think that it's a native to California because it's become naturalized. It was originally used for windbreaks, roadside plantings, and woodlots. Very, very successful plantings, and I hope that many of you have seen some of these trees growing in this region used as ornamentals in Southern California quite frequently. Of the 600 species, 70 of those have been introduced in California area, and there are, this is a list of some promising species that are currently used. There's the coastal areas are very favorable for growing eucalyptus without water amendments. However, if we go to the interior, it requires irrigation systems. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of continued development of eucalyptus in California. The Forest Service in this region isn't pursuing this. They're continuing some of their legacy studies. But there's a good strong potential and I'm disappointed in the fact that they aren't, because they do have a strong strong climate change set of policies in the state, and there's a large potential. But most of the bioenergy work that I see coming out of California is focused on cropping systems, and certainly an opportunity for eucalyptus to be explored further. Hybrid poplar and cottonwood are some of the what most of us think of when we think of woody cropping systems. We've got some native species, Populus deltoides, the eastern cottonwood, and Populus dreicocarpa, the black cottonwood in the northwest. We've created hybrids from these species that show very promising traits. We've also crossed native species with international species, either from Europe. The Populus nigra is a great example. We've got a number of very, very promising selections of deltoides by nigra crosses, but there's also crosses from Asia and other areas that are very promising. We have very good production potential with these poplars, up to 20 metric tons per hectare per year. They can propagate vegetatively. Many of you are familiar with taking cottonwood cuttings, growing them in school beds, 8 to 12 inch sticks, and placing them into the soil as they'll root without any intervention and sprout quite aggressively. So it's a very good way to propagate especially clonal planting, so we capture that genetics resource and maintain that. So the vegetative propagation has numerous advantages in these systems. However, these poplar systems have very high site demands. They have high nutrient and water requirements that exhibit some limitations. They also have multiple pest problems. That's probably one of the reasons why it's not extensively used in the southeast. The Septoria canker is a problem. There's problems with leaf beetles. And Melanthera rust is a problem in the western U.S. Despite this, there's over 50,000 acres, not hectares, of commercial plantings in the Pacific Northwest now. And those were largely the development of those systems were supported through the Department of Energy for energy production purposes, but these cropping systems have typically been situated near paper mills as supply for feedstocks for paper mills, and more recently they have moved to a lot wider spacing and are dedicating those plantations to solid wood products. Including an addition of a new sawmill in the core of this plantation area in the Pacific Northwest. But there's certainly a lot of opportunities for bioenergy production systems using poplar. There's extensive demonstration plantings throughout the Midwest, the Lake States, and the Corn Belt as well. Another crop that is really favored for bioenergy systems is in the southeast is sweet gum, liquid amber spiracicula. Many of you may know liquid amber as a horticultural tree, but it is quite a good producing tree. It grows on uplands, native to uplands throughout the southeast. It has very wide site type adaptability. A lot of the foresters wonder why we work with sweet gum, because they're always trying to eliminate it as a weed on their pine plantations. But it just gives you an idea that it's very, very capable of adapting to a number of different sites. And there are no significant pest problems with sweet gum, so there are some advantages there, but perhaps that's part of the reason why its productivity is more moderate, around ranging up to 10 metric tons per hectare per year. because it's using some of that productivity for defensive compounds. And many of you may know the smell of sweet gum. It has a lot of extractive secondary chemicals in the foliage. Sycamore is another opportunity for woody biomass cropping systems, and especially in the southeast. It also has high site requirements because of its origin from bottomland systems, but it's got good productivity, up to 12 metric tons per hectare per year. And it's extremely fast growing in the first few years of its life, up to 3 years, very, very aggressive. However, it suffers from a chronic disease problem after 3 years that has largely limited the use of it. There were some very promising breeding programs that were making progress on these disease problems, but those have since been terminated, and hopefully the germplasm has been secured. The sycamore is somewhat limited in drought tolerance as well, and so it favors irrigations. But it too coppices well, and so I just want to I mention these coppicing systems because I think those are important to explore, and kind of leads into talking about other coppice culture systems a large part, when we think about coppicing woody crop systems, it's with willow. We get very very good productivity from willow coppice culture, up to 30 dry metric tons per hectare per year. It's also propagated vegetatively, and there are very efficient systems, planting and harvesting systems for willow that have been developed in Europe and adopted in the U.S., and this is just some examples here. These are cuttings of willows. The poplar cuttings look very similar to this. This is a step planter that's developed to take large whips and cut those and plant those whips in a high density system. We also have quite mature harvesting systems for willow plantations when they're arranged properly. And these step planters are designed to plant the plantations so that implements can move down them, dual row systems that have tractor paths that can go through the plantations. Okay, these are high density, up to 15,000 stems per hectare, and they're cut every 3 years, 3 to 4 years. Those plantations will sprout back aggressively. The growth rates are 20 to 60% improved over that initial planting rotation, we can remove crop from these for 6 to 8 rotations before they need to be replaced after 25 years. They're typically considered more of a northern temperate a species or a cropping system used in northern Europe, as well as New York and Canada. But there are numerous willow species throughout the U.S. that have really largely been ignored or not investigated at all, and so there's large potential for development of other coppice systems throughout the U.S. Based on willow. But there are some other opportunities that I think are quite promising. For instance, this is a picture of sycamore sprouting following a harvest, and so the coppicing of that is quite a real possibility. One opportunity may be that we can avoid the disease problems by keeping these coppice systems in a young stage. And so harvest them before the disease becomes a problem. Similarly, we might be able to coppice eucalyptus. It sprouts quite readily, and thereby avoid frost damage and widen the range for growing the eucalyptus species. And again, we need to consider willow in other regions. I give you this slide because we're trying to decide what are the productivity rates, what's the productivity potential of these short rotation woody cropping systems, and we have trial data from certain areas, but these trials tend to be variable and scattered. This is just an example of some of the available studies with sycamore, and their fertilization rates range from 450 down to no nitrogen added. The stocking rates can be tens of thousands per hectare down to 1,000 per hectare, and they're harvested in various times. And we get production potentials from 14 tons per year down to 2 tons per year. So it's really hard to decide. What are the production potentials? We don't have a nice network of consistently established plantations. Of course, it's time-consuming and expensive to put in woody cropping systems. They take years to develop. So one approach that we've taken is to talk to practitioners that are experienced in this area, and in fact, the Southeast, we had a number of hardwood programs that existed for quite some time, and we took the opportunity to talk to those folks, poll those 12 individuals, a couple of hundred years of experience in hardwood cropping systems, and these are the kinds of productivity numbers that we got when we asked them what are the operational hardwood productivity rates for trees in the Southeast. And you can see that they were very favorable about the productivity prospects for eucalyptus and cottonwood. And I just wanted to point out too that these are the their opinions on the pine productivity rates and sweet gum productivity rates, quite modest, but still considered as woody cropping systems in the Southeast. And one other question we asked these folks was, what is the best hardwood species for biomass in the Southeast? And this is a cantankerous group, and so they gave us some kind of interesting results. The main result was, well, it depends, it does depend. It depends on the land location, the land base. It depends on the product that you want to produce from that. But the other surprising thing was that their most favorable cropping system was sweet gum, a modest producing tree. But the reason that they have selected this is because it has such a wide site type adaptability. So they have a large land base, and they don't want to have to restrict their plantings to some narrow areas, and so that's one of the reasons why the darling of the DOE bioenergy system, cottonwood, is very low favored by these practitioners, because it requires high quality sites, of which they don't have many. And those sites are expensive to get, because they're often, if they're cropped at all, they're cropped with soybeans and other high-value products. Pine was the other hardwood species that was considered by these folks to be the most favorable. I mean, basically, we asked them, what are the hardwoods? And they said, why aren't you considering pine? Because it's a really important, it's a very well-developed system, and it has all of the capabilities that we would look for in a cropping system. So anyway, this is a poll that we put together, and as part of this, we asked them for some production goals, values, and this is just some of the inputs that are required. They sum to some values for sweet gum of about $700 to $1,700 per hectare. And then here's the example for pine, the inputs required for pine over a rotation of $350 to $1,000. One thing I wanted to point out is that these higher productivity trees really reduce the cost per biomass, per ton of biomass. So high productivity trees we may be able to at these low input rates, so that would require quite a good site that doesn't require inputs. We can have a feedstock production cost of $13 a ton, and this can range up to $40 a ton with cottonwood, but you can see that the pine is quite economical as far as the production cost. But if they're lower productivity sites or genotypes, then those costs increase. So it's just a way of looking at some of the costs that are available. Okay, I'll just conclude about this. We have woody biomass, and it has a number of advantages, process and environmental advantages that we can exploit with these systems. Many short rotation woody cropping options are available, but most of those cropping systems require further development, either development of genetic resources or operations resources or procedures are still in need of development. We have a choice of crop species, but those depend on location. For instance, the eucalyptus is restricted in its distribution, even though it's a high productivity plant. The adaptability to a wide range of sites is favored by forest land managers, and that because that gives all of the forests. These systems are going to be in place for at least 10 years, and so there's a fairly narrow window, or I feel like it's an acceptable risk for those systems. The roots themselves are quite prolific, a lot of turnover, a lot of organic input into these systems, and so once they're established, there's not going to be a risk of erosion, and by the time they're harvested, the enrichment to the site is quite significant relative to, say, a bare ground initial cropping system.
So before we open the general discussion session, I just wanted to remind everybody that the next symposia part of this biomass energy systems begins at 1:10, and it's over in the Hyatt Regency Beacon Ballroom B, so we will be switching rooms. Our speakers this morning largely spoke about some of the economic, environmental, technological, and logistical challenges and considerations that we need to really have a good understanding on for these various feedstock production systems and conversion technology. So at this time, we'd like to open it up for general discussion, and I'll just briefly summarize what the speakers spoke about in their presentations. Robert began this morning discussing the various feedstock and conversion technologies that exist and some of the economic barriers that may limit those from occurring. Jeff then spoke about the importance of targeting potential grain feedstocks, particularly the issues around nutrient use efficiency and water use efficiency for producing these biomass feedstocks on agricultural and marginal lands. And this can, you know, these same considerations need to be considered for forest-based feedstocks as well. Russ presented some unique opportunities exploring various oilseed crops, particularly looking at co-cultures and intercropping regimes. John went into some of the challenges associated with the production of switchgrass, primarily from an economical and environmental standpoint, as well as some of the logistical challenges we have as far as cutting and baling this material and getting it off the site. And then lastly, we heard Zakiya and Mark speak about opportunities in terms of forest-based feedstocks, whether it's intercropping with switchgrass or short rotation woody crops. So if the authors are present, we can just have an open discussion and just see how it goes. We have about 20 minutes or so.